Welcome to Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails.
Blessed Trails. I am Belinda Gale, and I am so delighted to be your host as we visit with interesting and diverse guests. We also have the honor of featuring our guests' gospel and patriotic music and sometimes poetry, most all of which has a definite Western flair. I am so pleased to have Lana Hanna, the third and final member of the Sons of the San Joaquin, with us today. But before we bring him on, let's listen to an old classic he recorded for his solo album, El Paso.
The West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rosa's Cantina, music would play and Felina would whirl. One night a wild young cowboy came in, wild as the West Texas wind. Dashing and daring, a drink he was sharing with wicked Felina, the girl that I love. So in anger, I challenged his right for the love of this maiden, down with his hand for the gun that he wore. My challenge was answered in less than a heartbeat. The handsome young stranger lay dead on the floor. Out through the back door of Roses I ran, out where the horses were tied. I caught a good one, he looked like he could run, up on his back and away I did ride, just as fast, away I ride like the could from the town of El Paso out through the badlands of New Mexico. Back in El Paso, my life will be worthless. Everything's gone, and this love's all I know. Something is dreadfully wrong, for I feel a deep burning pain in my side. My love for Felina is strong, and I rise where I've fallen. Though I am weary, I can't stop to rest. I see the white puff of smoke from the rifle. I feel the bullet go deep in my chest. From out of nowhere, Felina has found me, kissing my cheek as she kneels by my side. Cradled by two loving arms that I'll die for, one little kiss and Felina goodbye.
Great version of that song. As the kid in the iconic trio, The Sons of the San Joaquin, I know for a fact that Lon had his hands watching out for his dad, Joe, and Uncle Jack. And in that year I spent touring with this great bunch of fellows, it was quickly evident to me that Lon was the driving force behind this remarkable group and the reason they moved from the living room to sold-out auditoriums. To recap their achievements, they were chosen the Western Music Association's Group or Duo of the Year 8 times and received the Album of the Year 2 times. The Western Music Association also bestowed on them their most prestigious honor by inducting them into the Western Music Hall of Fame in 2006. Also from the Academy of Western Artists, the Sons were awarded Traditional Album of the Year and Entertainers of the Year. To top it off, the Sons have their own star in the Western Walk of Stars in Santa Clarita, California. I don't think Lon had any idea what he was setting in motion when he talked his dad and uncle into taking their music outside of their living room. His dad and uncle were retired, but Lon took on the daunting task of juggling a day job and his precious family as the Sons' career unexpectedly just skyrocketed. The thing I love most about Lon is that not only is he a talented singer and musician, he is a wonderful, caring person and a cherished friend. I am so pleased to welcome to the show Lon Hanna. Welcome, Lon.
Hi, Belinda. Thanks for having me.
How are you? Oh, I'm pleased to have you. I was thinking as I was putting this show together, and I've just brought up a lot of memories of being on the road with you guys, and you and I used to just, like, you know, look conspiratorially at each other because it was like herding cats. Trying to keep your dad and your uncle going in the directions they needed to go, because they were so cute, because they were just like along for the ride. You were the one that was worried about all the business side of everything that was going on. They were just enjoying the journey. So it was I admired you, and to this day for what you did to keep that thing rolling.
Thank you. Yeah, I had to be able to do 2 jobs. Be the driving force when I needed to be, but then I had to also realize when I was supposed to be a son and a nephew, and then I had to keep
yes.
my mouth shut. So
that's kind of a tightrope to walk, wasn't it?
Right, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, tell us a little bit. I know that, you know, your dad was, you know, we've talked with Jack and we've talked with your dad, so we've gotten some background on them, which has been, you know, so fascinating. I've learned a lot that I really, all the years that I've known y'all, things I didn't know, which was very fun. But for your perspective, I mean, you came along, your dad's in baseball and you guys are bouncing around the country. Tell us about that.
Well, I was actually born on opening day of the 1956 baseball season, and Dad was playing on the Los Angeles Angels, catching for them at that time. And so 1956, he's in San Diego, and they call the clubhouse. He's going to play a doubleheader down there. And they said, you know, your wife's having a baby. And so he asked the manager if he could head back up to Pasadena where we were living, or Mom and Dad were living. And he said, well, you're my starting catcher. What can you do anyway? So he played that day, and I actually have a cherished picture that a sports writer emailed me, and it's my dad running out a single picture of him crossing first base that very day. So it's a real sweet memory to see that and know exactly what my dad was doing when I was being born. So
exactly, and you have the picture to prove it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I know that you have been blessed with a wonderful Christian mom and dad, and your mother who's with the Lord now. But oh my gosh,
yes.
What a rock that woman was. Just admired her
precious.
So much. And,
she remembered everyone's name. We meet so many people, as you know, and mm-hmm. my mom toured with us a lot, and she never failed to be able to, you know, remind me who's coming up to say hi, and I never saw her ever forget anybody's name. It was just remarkable, and she was very caring lady. I remember we got to travel, you know, with Dad, and during the summers when he was playing ball up until my sixth or seventh year, and spent some time in Honolulu, in Fort Worth, and even Toronto, Canada. And I flew home with my mom and dad when my grandmother passed away. I knew, you know, he told me that, you know, she'd been a believer. I'd gone to church all my life, but, you know, a few months later when we were back home, an evangelist came through and he was singing a beautiful song called Tell Mother I'll Be There. And that just touched my heart because I knew my grandma was in heaven and I wanted to see her again, you know. So I accepted Christ. I walked down the aisle, you know, as a six or seven-year-old and shed a couple of tears because I was happy I was going to see my grandma again. And it was just a day I'll never forget. Even as a young kid.
Wow. Well, and I know for all of us, everyone that I talk to on the show and just in general, there always seems to be, there's one thing of that faith that you have as a child or, you know, I think this is especially true for kids who grow up in church. We who come to the Lord, you know, later in life as you know, older teenagers or adults, you know, that's our epiphany moment. Of the relational thing that we can have with the Lord, that it's not just God out there somewhere, God that we can literally be best friends with. And at what point in your life did that happen?
You know, that was more towards my high school, the end of my high school years, and really had an awakening of my faith at that time. And God has been incredibly faithful and blessed our family immensely, even with tragedy, you know, losing my mom and even my little brother passed away. But knowing that they both had, you know, strong faith and had accepted Christ, I'll see them again one day.
That's a wonderful assurance to have, isn't it, Lon?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure
I feel so bad for people who lose loved ones and they don't have that belief system. They don't have that assurance, and it's just so final and so done. And you know that. So it's a bittersweet happening for us when our loved ones go on before us, because we're sad because we won't have them with us any longer on this earth. But we know we're going to see them again, and so that just takes some of the sting out of it, which is why Christ died for us in the first
Amen.
Place.
Take that
sting out. Well, we're going to go to another song right now, and this is a long song, we'll warn them, but it is a wonderful story song, and it was, you want to tell us a little bit about A Border Affair?
Border Affair was originally a poem by Badger Clark, and the tune and so forth is a version of it I sort of is based on one that I heard Michael Martin Murphy do, but he told me that nobody knows who put the music to it, you know, but it's a Badger Clark poem. And Michael said that he spent some time in old Mexico and that he thought the song might be autobiographical, but he fell in love down in Mexico, but had to leave, you know, and it's a real dramatic and beautiful story.
It is. Well, let's listen to Border Affair.
Spanish is the loving tongue. a girl I learned it from. Living down Sonora way. Now I don't look much like a lover, and yet I say her love words over. Late at night when I'm all alone, mi amor, mi corazón, there were nights that I would write, and she would listen for my spur. She'd fling that big door open wide and raise those laughing eyes of hers. And how those hours would get to flying. Pretty soon I'd hear her crying, please don't leave me all alone, mi amor, mi corazón. One time I had to fly. I got into a foolish gambling fight, and I had to say a swift goodbye on that black, unlucky night. And traveling north, her words kept ringing, and with every hoofbeat I'd hear her singing, please don't leave me all alone, mi amor, mi corazón. Well, I ain't never seen her since that night, 'cause I can't cross the line, you know. And she was Mexican and I was white. Like as not, it's better so. And yet I've always sort of missed her. since that very first night when I kissed her. I left her heart, but I lost my own. Adios, mi querida. Mi corazón.
Oh, that's one of my favorites of yours, Lon.
Thank you. Yeah, I love singing that song. It's so tender. Sometimes I dedicate it to the, you know, the lovers in the audience or husbands and wives and so forth.
Yeah. It's a good one. It was always a crowd favorite. I can say that from experience. Always a crowd favorite. So we ultimately settled in Visalia, and that's where you went to school. So I know that you were teaching, were you not, when the Suns kind of took off? Can you tell us how, what drew you into teaching and what you taught?
Well, I taught elementary school, and my wife was teaching elementary school. I had tried a lot of different things. I did music all through school, in my own schooling and high school and even in college, but I didn't get a music major. And so, I went in the Marine Corps even in 1979 to, it was all volunteer, and I knew, I wanted to do, my duty. And Dad had been
right.
in Korean War era veteran. He didn't have to do combat, and I fortunately didn't either. I was in from 1979 to 86 as a reservist, and some of that was being away from home and so forth. And I realized I didn't want to make a career of that. And talked to Susan about, just my natural bent is to love telling people about stuff, and I love history and not very good at math, but I only taught second grade, so I could even do the math. So. But I got into teaching, kind of late in a sense. I was 29 or 30 when I had my first classes, and then the Suns took off. We had been singing in the backyard, and I talked him into letting me book the group, and eventually through some amazing.
We'll talk more about that in the next segment, because I really, that is such a cool story of how the Suns came to be, and I definitely want to spend a little more time on that. But I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to really flesh that out, and so I don't want to kind of jump the gun on that. But one thing I do want to talk about is, your wife Susan and your boys. I know I talked with Susan, and she when you guys had been going for a little while, and she was just kind of dumbfounded by the whole thing. She thought it was going to be a little, blip on the radar, and you could go, sing a few places, and then you'd be done and go back to teaching. And nobody knew that it was going to explode into what it did. And I would like you to talk a little bit about, I know at one point you and I were talking, and you were telling me it's something, one of your boys, I can't remember which one, said something that just broke your heart, because everything they did was always about the schedule. Oh, we can't do that because of Daddy's schedule, and Daddy won't be here because of his schedule. And your little boy said, "Daddy, I hate your schedule."
Yeah.
And I remember.
It was tough. Yeah. That was my younger boy, Mark. Mark is 27 now, if you can believe it. And
wow.
Jeff is 29. He'll be 30 in September. It's just time has flown. But when they were really little, we were actually overseas. We were in Saudi Arabia on a State Department exchange thing, and we did music in the Middle East. And I would talk to Susan every week on the phone, and she said, "Oh, Mark," she would tell him, "Oh, Daddy will soon be home. Daddy will soon be home." And he cried himself to sleep a lot. He was only about 3 and didn't really understand why Dad was always gone. And she said, well, Daddy's coming home next week, you know. And she tells me, and he looks up and he says, oh, no, Daddy's never coming home, you know. He sort of had accepted it, I guess. That just broke my heart. I said, well, thanks for telling me that when I'm 5,000 miles away, you know. But I will be home. And that was a tender moment. And I realized, you know, Susan was kind of being a single mother at that point. And so I really slowed my part of the band down.
Right.
You know, after that, and Billy Thornberry came on board and took half of the touring duties. I went back to, you know, teaching part time. So it was a hard decision, but in some ways, but in others, I had talked to so many performers in various genres, you know, that we'd run into at fairs and things, and this one guy from the Texas Tornadoes, wonderful guy, Doug Somm, and he had several kids and was kind of estranged from them, and he told me something about, I said I was missing my family, and he said, buddy, don't let that get you out of control or you'll regret it, you know. And it was really some of the best counsel I've ever gotten.
Yeah, because it's easy, we're in this business, I mean, you're always looking ahead, you're always looking to that next gig, and you're just racing along, and you know, years can evaporate and you don't even know where they went, and because you're just always the next gig, you have this stuff coming at you so fast. So yeah, that was, and you know, I have to commend you for the courage to step down, to step to the side and allow someone else to come in to carry that, you know, weight with the son so that you could be with your family, because a lot of musicians just can't bring themselves to do that. You know, the music has such a grip on them that it's hard for them to sacrifice part of their music to give it to their families. So, you know,
yeah,
I'm always
amazed, you know, when artists will, you know, if they really make it big, there'll be a point where they step back from touring, you know, and I'm talking about the very top level people, you know, Susie Boggess,
right,
and Garth Brooks. I mean, they get off the road after a while, and, you know, Clint Black, I mean, it just and then sometimes they hit it hard again after their kids are grown. But I have a great relationship with my boys that I wouldn't trade for anything. And, you know, I don't think we were ever going to be the next big country act or anything, but it was a hard decision, but I'm glad I made it, because I've got good relationships with family that are more important than anything else, you know.
That will last long, long after the sons are no more. You'll still
right.
have the relationships
Absolutely.
with your boys, and that's critical. Well, tell us a little bit about this next song we're going to do is Little Cowboy. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was telling you about Billy Thornberry. Bill went out with the band for a long time, and he and his son wrote this. And it's a lovely tune about a little buckaroo that wants to grow up and be like his dad.
Oh, well, so cute. Well, he did a good job. And this is a really sweet little song, and it's called Little Cowboy.
Climb in your bunk now, little cowboy. That big old herd out there will keep. Close your eyes and you'll be dreaming. Riding roundups in your sleep. We had a big day, little cowboy. Done everything from rope to ride. Mending fence and moving cattle. You were right there by my side. So have a good night, cowboy. My little partner, I'm as proud as I can be. Just to know you want to be a cowboy like me. We'll get up early in the morning, and you can help me tack that shoe. Then we'll hit the trail together, doing things that cowboys do.
Share almost the serendipitous story of how the Sons came to be. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I hope I can do this in a concise way, but it was pretty magical.
That's okay. Take your time. Take your time.
We were at my grandpa's 85th birthday, and he was born in 1902. And when he was 85, we would always go to his place, and it was out in the country, you know, and Uncle Jack and Dad would always get guitars and play, and my grandpa would sing with them. And he asked them, he said, "Boys, get the guitar, you know," and they were singing what he called pioneer music, and it was the Sons of the Pioneers, and they harmonized on some of those things. And I'd been listening to them since I was, you know, knee high, and I always had wanted to sing with them because their voices blended so well. It sounded like more than two guys, you know, when they sang. And then my grandpa, you know, I just thought that when you grew up, if you were a man, you played sports and, you know, sang in the choir and went to church and all this, you know, and sang cowboy songs. So I talked him into letting me sing a song with him. And, oh, my gosh, it just gave me chills, you know. And I was still taking music classes at Fresno State, and I had shared Sons of the Pioneers cassette tapes with different people up, you know, in the music department, and they thought the harmonies were really cool. And I said, "Gosh, you know, we ought to do something with this." And they said, "Oh, nobody wants to hear this old music anymore." And I said, "Well, you might be surprised, you know." So we started doing, you know, I mean, the Lions Club picnic, you know, and just, you know, singing, not quite singing on the street corner, but just little homemade things. And I was booking us. And I went back to Las Vegas when Dad and Jack were both going to be gone. I tried to talk them into going with me to Las Vegas for a reunion of old Western musicians and so forth. And the Rainsmen were there, Doc Denning you know, all of that band, and they were there, and I had been taking guitar lessons from Doc, and he had me come up and sing a song there, and I had a tape that Doc had put bass and fiddle and lead guitar on something that Jack had recorded. I wasn't even really playing guitar when we recorded this first thing, and it was at a little Christian camp, but it was all, you know, Sons of the Pioneers tunes, about six of them. And I took some cassettes of those back with me, and our good friend Gary McMahon was there, and, you know, got to get up in front. They invited me to come up and sing, and he said, "Man," he said, "I wish I wish I had your voice, and I wish you had something better, he said to me. That was the funniest thing. I remember it still. But he said, do you have any tapes of yourself? And I said, no, I have, but I have this of my dad, my uncle, and me. And he took it, and apparently he tells me the story that he just put it in his truck. He had a hay truck, and it was in the glove box with a whole bunch of other cassettes. And several months later, he was out, you know, bucking hay, and he reached in for something. And he thought maybe the Writers in the Sky had given it to him or something. But I had a phone number on there, and Sons of the San Joaquin, he put it in. And he invited us, after hearing that, to come to Elko, Nevada, to the Cowboy Poetry Gathering. And he was in charge of putting together a harmony session, you know, where it was just harmony groups. And the Writers in the Sky were on it, and us, and the McCutcheon brothers, and another family group, you know. And we got up there and sang those songs, and it was absolutely electric. I mean, I was barely playing the guitar. In fact, I got goofed up on a song, and I was just moving my hand over the strings. You know, I wasn't actually playing because I got goofed up and I'm so nervous, you know. And Jack looked over at me. He goes, you know, after that song, he goes, "What's the matter with you?" And I said, "I'm just so nervous, you know." So anyway, Michael Martin Murphy was in that session, and Waddy Mitchell, and you know, it's funny. I would never do this today. I would never go to an established artist or something. I might go to a friend and say, you know, hey, you want to sing this backstage or whatever. But I approached him about a song when we finally ran into them. And, oh, by the way, yeah, they invited us to stay and be on the Saturday night show. And we were going to leave after that harmony session and just go back
wow.
to Visalia. And Hal Cannon said, no, if I don't put you on the Saturday night show, they're going to lynch me around here, you know. And he said, gosh, yeah, we'll sure do it. So we, in the green room, I saw Michael Martin Murphy talking to Waddy Mitchell and some people, and I knew him. I didn't know Waddy at the time. I mean, I'd seen him on, you know, the Tonight Show, but I hadn't ever met yeah. either one of them. So I asked him about a tune called Long Line of Love, and I said, hey, would you sing a duet with me on that right now? And he goes, sure. And he goes and gets his guitar, and I started singing with him and backed him up on it. And then Jack and Dad came over and put a baritone and a bass on it, and he just thought it was the greatest thing. And so several minutes later, after we sang, he came up and he said, this is going to seem weird, but I'm doing a cowboy album in April, and I wonder if you guys will come to Nashville and sing on it with me. I said, yeah, you know, so I mean...
We can arrange that.
Yeah, we'll work that into our schedule, our very busy schedule. Instead of doing the Lions Club picnic, we'll actually come to Nashville and sing on your album. But yeah, it was astounding. And you know, not long after that album was released, they formed a boutique label called Warner Western. And we actually got a record deal from Warner Brothers through that, and put out three albums on Warner Brothers. It was a pretty heady time in our career. We were just it just took off and started performing all over the country and you know, even around the world. I mean, we've been to Switzerland and Germany and we've been to Japan, Mexico, Canada. So we've been incredibly, incredibly blessed and fortunate to get to do it. And I've been able to do it with my uncle and my dad, which is another thing that a lot of guys envy me for, you know,
yes.
being able to stay that close to my dad over the years, you know.
Yes. Well, and one of the things that you didn't talk about in the Elko story that I know we've talked about is you said when you guys got the call to come to Elko, you realized you really didn't even have enough songs for a full set, because everything that you'd been doing had been like, you know, 2-3 songs here and 3-4 songs
yeah.
there. You hadn't really like done a set. So, and then your dad didn't play bass, didn't
well,
I mean,
he had to learn the bass in the, it was about 3 months lead up to to go into Elko. Elko's yep. was always at the end of January at that time, mm-hmm. and it probably still is. I haven't yeah. been in a few years. But Dad picked up a bass. He had played a little bit of bass in the orchestra when he was in high school, but he hadn't had one in his hands for, you know, 50 years or 40 years, you know. And it was just yeah. it was just amazing that, you know, we had our six or seven songs, but we thought we were only singing on this little harmony session. We got to do those songs, and they wanted an encore, and Jack goes, well, we don't even know anymore songs. That's all we got. And the guy goes, well, do one of them over. So we actually sang one of the songs over in the harmony session, and then, you know, it was just pretty funny.
I love that. I really do. And the thing is what our listeners don't understand is going to Elko, the Elko gathering, is like the granddaddy of all of the gatherings that are,
right.
I mean, it spawned the gatherings across the United States and into Canada and even in Europe some. So, I mean, that was like the big deal gathering. So, make your debut at Elko was huge.
Yeah, there were so many people from – there were cowboys and cowgirls from all over the country that saw us that weekend, and we could have
mm-hmm.
never gotten that kind of notoriety just, you know, going from place to place.
Out of the gate.
Instantly,
yep.
people from all over the country knew of us, and we started being able to book, you know, cowboy poetry gatherings and festivals and things. So it was
yeah.
pretty – it was just a God thing. I mean, I remember
– yes.
You know, I prayed about it. I mean, I was home. It was funny when I got the call from Nashville, you know, because Michael said that he wanted us to do it, and he said, I'll have my, you know, my people will call you or whatever, and I'll have my manager call you. Well,
yeah.
I was home sick with the flu in bed when he called, and I almost didn't even pick it up. I just rolled over in the bed and picked it up, and he said, hi, this is Bob Burwell from Nashville. I'm looking for Lon Hanna, and I said, oh, that's me, you know, and I just perked up real good and talked to him, and then I went, wow, this is real. It wasn't just a flight of fancy that Michael had
right.
and didn't follow
right.
up on. He actually, they did intend to bring us to Nashville, and it was just
wow.
pretty magical. I have to say, to this day, it gives me goosebumps thinking about how wonderful that was at that time.
Well, when the Lord directs you down a path, he equips you to go down that path, and he opens the doors, and he makes it happen. Our job is to have the courage to step out when we have no idea where we're going. You know, that's
right,
our,
right.
That's
it
job.
Was, yeah, it was a real blessing, and I knew, you know, God was in it because, you know, the things like that just don't typically happen. So
right,
I was very,
right.
very fortunate.
Well, thank you so much. I know that was a little longer than what we normally do on a segment, but I really,
yeah, sorry,
really wanted it. No, I really wanted it. The story is so cool and it's so unusual. I really wanted, and your dad and Jack touched on it a bit, but they didn't have the whole story. So I knew when we had you on, we'd get the whole story. So we're going to go now to one of my favorite songs that you do as well. I think this is one, did Jack write In My Colorado Home?
He wrote the music to a poem by Daryl Arnold.
Oh,
I know
great.
You've met
okay.
Daryl. And, yeah.
I have.
Daryl, it was a poem on a Western Horseman calendar, and Jack saw that, and the minute he read it, he started getting tune in his head, and Jack, you know, fiddled together, cobbled together a chorus for it because it was just it was in verse format. And Jack wrote the chorus and added that to it and called him and asked him if we could use it. And he said, yeah, and it's been a great song for us. And Jack wrote it with me in mind to sing. So I was really proud and honored to get to do that.
Well, you do a fabulous job on it. So let's listen to In My Colorado Home.
Where the cattle grazed under Colorado skies, the tumbling creeks of the Spanish peaks, tales both old and wise. If you learn to love these mountains, you never will depart. If your heart's in Colorado, Colorado's in your heart. Then a lady fair who lived out there, and this cowboy fell in love. I held her tight by a campfire bright under blazing stars above. Pledged my love forever and vowed I'd never part. My heart was for this woman for my heart.
Under azure skies where the eagle flies is where I long to ride. Down the wooded slopes with the dreams and hopes and sweetheart by my side. The streams and the trails and the mountain vales are the paths I long to roam. Where the hawk flies free is a place for me. In my Colorado home.
But a young cowboy full of life and joy has a need to wander far. So I rode away on a piebald gray led by the morning star. I pushed that gray down Texas way where the cattle trails all start. My heart was for me only, just I was in my heart. So I rode those trails to the hitching rails of that rugged, lonesome land. Danced all night, I drank and fight, cause I could not understand why I found no peace, no sweet release, and by morning I'd depart. My heart was lost and lonely, lonely was my heart.
Under azure skies where the eagle flies is where I long to ride. Down the wooded slopes with the dreams and hopes and sweetheart by my side. Streams and the trails and the mountain vales are the paths I long to roam. Where the hawk flies free is a place for me. In my Colorado
course to the mountains I did ride. My love so fair was awaiting there on the slopes of the great divide. We'll always be together, never more to part. My heart's in Colorado, Colorado's in my heart.
Under azure skies where the eagle flies is where I long to ride. Down the wooded slopes with the dreams and hopes and sweetheart by my side. The streams and the trails and the mountain vales are the paths I long to roam. Where the hawk flies free is a place for me. In the Colorado home. Where the hawk flies free is a place for me. In my Colorado home. Colorado.
Tell you, and that especially that last part when you guys hit that live, oh, gave me goosebumps every time. Just so good, Lon. It was just so good.
Well, thank you, Belinda.
We're at the point now with the sons. I mean, your dad and Jack are both in their 80s and both having, you know, their health challenges for people that get in their 80s, and I know that y'all have very limited performances that you're doing now, and that is just such a sad thing for all of us who just are, you know, diehard fans of y'all. So tell me how that's working for you, and what's on the horizon for you.
Well, the guys just don't like to travel much anymore because it's just hard on them doing the traveling. But
right,
you know, we still do our Christmas show. And in fact, you've performed on the Christmas show in the past, and we do that every year in Visalia. But I have a band that I'm calling San Joaquin Junction, and
nice.
You know, features me, and it's a bass player that has played bass for Dad and the Sons for several years, Dan Kaler, and our little gal fiddle player named Delisi, or D. Johnson, and we've got a little three-piece, and we've done a few things here locally, but we're working up a a real good set and intending to go back to Colorado and perform in Colorado Springs for Scott O'Malley, and
mm-hmm.
he's agreed to
mm-hmm.
book us. And so, you know, I'm just crossing my fingers that the Lord will open a new door for us, you know. And Dad and Jack have given me their you know, wholehearted support and are really pulling for me. So I'm going to continue to do some cowboy music and you know, continue to entertain folks, because I just love doing it. Love doing it.
Once it's in your blood, you can't walk away from it. You know, I think no matter how old you get, and I'd probably your dad and Jack both. I mean, no matter how old they get, if they can get up and sing somewhere and give that gift to people, they're going to do it. You know, you just, and the Lord puts it inside of you. You can't just let it sit there. It'll just drive you crazy.
True. That's true. And we actually have some stuff that was previously recorded that we polished up here just recently. And we're intending to release a CD called One More Ride here in the fall. So,
excellent.
We're excited.
All the fans are going to be thrilled.
Yeah, and lots of new Jack material on there, and some Sons of the Pioneers things, you know, typical to what we've done in the past. But, you know, we can't get out there and perform as much as we did, but we wanted to get in the studio one more time. So,
wow.
So that'll be coming out this year.
That's exciting. And you need to get that all over Facebook and stuff too. You can get the hype. I bet you guys will sell out before you even get it printed.
Well, I hope so. That'd be a joy. But I will put that on Facebook and when we start gigging with San Joaquin Junction more, you know, I'll be able to post some of that stuff too.
Absolutely. And we definitely need to have you back on when you get some stuff recorded with San Joaquin Junction, and that we need to have you back on and feature some music from that as well. And
of course, the new
CD for you guys. Maybe get, I almost hesitate to do this, but maybe get all three of you on at the same time with the new CD. That ought to be interesting, huh?
Sure. We'll sure do it.
That would be fun. So when the new CD comes out, let me know, and we'll schedule a time
okay.
we can get all three of you on the show at the same time, and we can just let everybody know about that new CD. That would be very fun.
Well, remember now, a couple of us are sort of half deaf, so we might talk over each
yes.
other a bit.
Yes. I understand. I understand. Well, let's go to, now, I think this next song, this is a cute little swing tune, actually, and is this on your solo album, Miss Molly?
Yes, and it's this one is Cindy Walker, and
that's a Cindy Walker.
Rich O'Brien
yep.
told me that's Cindy Walker. So, Miss Molly.
It's a cutie. So let's listen to Miss Molly.
Oh, have you seen Miss Molly? Her cheeks are rosy red. Her lips are soft as satin, and they taste like gingerbread. Oh, 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 me, oh, my, Miss Molly, I'm in love with you. Me, oh, my, Miss Molly, say you love me too. Now when Miss Molly smiles, the sun is dim a spell. And when she laughs, her voice is like a little silver bell. Oh, 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 me, oh, my, Miss Molly, I'm in love. If only sweet Miss Molly dear would say that she'd be mine. Oh, 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 me, oh, my, Miss Molly, I'm in love with you. Me, oh, my, Miss Molly, say you love me too. Even though I've told you so, I'll tell you just once more. Oh, 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 me,
Molly, I'm in love with you. Me, oh my, Miss Molly, say you love me too. Me, oh my, Miss Molly, I'm in love with you. Me, oh my, Miss Molly, say you love me too.
Oh, good job. That was good.
Yeah, thank you.
I love all those stops. That was fun. That was
fun to listen to. Yeah, that's a collaboration I did with a guy named Terry Talbot. And, you know, he arranged that. And he's also the one who arranged El Paso, you know,
yeah.
And kind of shortened it a little bit. El Paso is pretty long, you know, the original. And but
yeah,
I love the song.
So he
crafted it so I could get the whole song in and not as much time, you know.
Yeah, when I saw that it was 3 minutes, I was like, wait a minute, that's like a 6 minute song. So yeah, he did a good job. Unless someone just absolutely knew all the lyrics and they wouldn't have figured that out. Well, Juan, it is just, it's been so much fun to have you on. I knew I was going to be fun. And I really want people to know how to get hold of you if they want to book your band or if they want to get hold of any of your music or the Sun's music. And can you tell us where people can reach you?
Well, they can reach me at Steer Guitar, S-T-E-E-R guitar at AOL.com. And I'm on Facebook, Lon Hanna, on Facebook. So, you know, I don't know, I don't have a website of my own, but that's in the future too.
Yep.
But those are two ways to get a hold of me. So.
Right. And then of course, if they want to get a hold of the Sun's music, they can just go to, I think it's thesuns.com, right?
Thesuns.com, exactly.
Yep. They can get a hold of Sun's music. Well, thank you so much. And before we let you go, I do want to, probably my favorite album is your gospel album, Gospel Trails, that you guys did. Some wonderful old hymns and beautiful music on there. And we're going to close with a piece from that. And so can you just tell us a little bit about Lead Me Gently Home?
Well, Lead Me Gently Home is an old hymn. I think it was written in the 1870s. And I heard the great Lloyd Perriman sing it with the Sons of the Pioneers, and he was the second, you know, tenor in the group. That the original was Leonard Sly, you know, Roy and Bob Nolan and Tim Spencer.
He was
the very, he took over for Tim Spencer, I think it is, and I do his version exactly, and this one's produced by Mr. Rich O'Brien.
Oh, well, it is wonderful. And thank you again for being on the show. Just love you, brother. And we're going to close out with Lon's version of Lead Me Gently Home.
Lest I fall.
I could listen to those guys all day, and I often do. Just love those guys, and I love their sound, and I love their hearts. And I always enjoy visiting with Lon. Today was no exception, and I always love to hear the story of how the Sons came to be. I never get tired of that story. I don't know about you, but for me, their story is such an inspiration and really a wonderful example. Now, think of it. Their first official gig was at the granddaddy of all cowboy poetry gatherings. And when they were invited to participate, they didn't even have enough songs to fill up a full set. Lonnie was barely learning to play the guitar, and Joe had to learn the bass. Talk about pushing through your fears and stepping out on faith. I can imagine that the scripture in 2 Timothy 1:7 was probably pretty helpful to them right about then. And it reads, "For God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control." Now, these are godly men who know what it means to trust in the Lord. So they stepped out on faith, knowing the Lord would not let them down. But they also knew that they had responsibilities in this. They had to step up to the plate. So they disciplined themselves to quickly learn not only the songs they needed, but the skills that would then carry them down this new path that the Lord had laid out for them. And the scripture applies to each and every one of us as well. If the Lord lays something new on your heart and opens up a new door for you, it's only natural to be apprehensive. But if fear sets in, you can rest assured that it is most likely the enemy trying to scare you off. The bigger the dream, the more potential to positively impact those around you, the greater the fear that is thrown at you. But please take heart, because this scripture in Timothy makes it quite clear. The spirit of fear is not from God. The second scripture I want to share with you today is one that I feel dovetails perfectly with 2 Timothy 1:7. And this one is one of my go-to scriptures, and it's found in Philippians 4:13. And it says, "I can do all things through him who strengthens me." So we don't have to depend entirely on ourselves. Yes, we have a part to play, and we have to do the work that is attached to the calling, to the new path, but we will never, ever be alone, and we don't have to depend solely on the strength we can muster within ourselves. Our strength, our real strength, comes from the Lord. So I would encourage you that if there is something you feel the Lord is calling you to do and you are feeling fearful, please meditate not only on these scriptures, but I would encourage you to use that concordance that's in the back of your Bible and look up other scriptures on fear. There are a lot of them. And I am confident you will be infused with peace and a holy boldness to plow through that fear, knowing that the Lord is there to guide you and keep you every step of the way. Well, that wraps our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the gift of your time. And thank you again to our very special guest, Lon Hanna, for visiting and sharing with us today. And there is never, ever a big enough thank you for my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all that he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. Please check out all of the other fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio. And remember that they are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. And you can even download our nifty mobile app that allows you to take us on the go with you. And if you like our shows, please help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today. And until next week, all of your trails be blessed.
Garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses, and he that he gave.